This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itpro.tv/knowhow and use the code KNOWHOW30. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code KNOWHOW to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase. On this episode of KNOWHOW,
Back to School Network Edition, Part 2.
Welcome to Know-How. It's the Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Ballaser.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to show you some of the projects that we've been geeking out with so you can take them home and geek out on your own. Brian!
Padre!
You know, there's been something that's been rummaging around my head for a while.
Yeah, is that what that noise has been? That, like, rattling. Empty, hollow, rattling sound?
A month ago, mm-hmm. We were in Berlin.
Yes.
And
only a month ago.
I was told that when I did this for day three, this was wrong.
That's wrong. That's just showing how American
Germans
you are.
Do this.
Three.
Yes.
So if you ever find yourself in a bar trying to pretend that you're German and you don't want to...
The funny
thing
is...
You've seen Inglourious Basterds.
I've seen it, but yeah. I was like, okay, that's a movie thing. But our camera crew was like, no, that's right. Three. No, seriously, we do it this
three.
Way.
Yeah, and like when we went away. To restaurants and stuff like that, and like...
Three people. Actually, we went to that Italian restaurant, and when we were asking to be seated, they asked how many, and I did this, and she immediately started speaking English to me.
I'm like, yeah. It was a giveaway.
It was a giveaway. It actually was a giveaway. If that was from the movie, I would have been shot dead on the sidewalk.
That's right. Other than, I don't think there's many Filipino Germans.
No. I don't think she actually thought I was German.
Yeah.
She just wasn't sure if I spoke maybe
English or something else. Yeah.
Japanese, whatever it might be. All right. So, folks, we're here to give you another back to school episode, but like last week, it is a network edition. Specifically, what are the skills, the pieces of gear that you need to bring into your dorm, your new residence hall, so that you can compute safely. This is actually kind of fun.
Yeah. This is the sort of thing that I like to dig into, because when I'm at home, I like to play with my network and stuff. But when I used to be in a dorm setting, or like actually I would go visit people in a dorm setting, it was always really frustrating to get things to work because you're in like a different environment. You're always trying to get over these loopholes and kind of not circumvent or do anything
you try
illegal,
to
but...
understand what is the black area and what's the gray area.
Right. Yeah. So it actually helped me learn a lot. It taught me how to hook up Xboxes together, System Link over the dorm so that we could play Halo 2 together. So important stuff. Yeah.
So specifically today, what we want to cover is we want to cover some of the easy things that you can do to find out what's on your network so that you can protect yourself. Because you got to remember, a campus network, the dorm room network.
It's a hostile environment.
You should consider it a hostile environment. You may be surrounded by friends, but you're also connected to anybody who might have any access to the network whatsoever, and that can be a little troubling.
Yeah, so it's a good opportunity to learn best practices as far as network stuff.
As far as learning best practices, I always like to start with hardware. remember these. We use these on several shows. These are my favoritest. And thank you very much, Ned Optics, for giving this to me, 5 years ago? Well, we were at an interop, and we were disassembling everything. And the Ned Optics guys knew that I had been like eyeing their gear for a while,
and so, it was probably the drool on it. It was like, a giveaway, right?
Well, because I kept doing this as a stroke.
Can I has?
And then finally, the guy's like, "Yes, Padre, you can take those.
Just take them."
So they gave me these. They also gave me some fiber taps, which are really nice, but not so useful for us because not a lot of us have fiber.
Okay, what's the price on these though? Like five
really year? Nice, Brian.
Yeah, really, really nice. They look
so
nice.
If you can find these used, like eBay, probably starts at about $800 and goes up to like $5,000.
Wow. So when you got these, it was like $5,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, these are two different types of taps. You may notice that one has three ports and one has four. Three ports.
There you go.
Three ports and one has four ports.
Nope.
Four ports. See, how do you do that? That's just natural. It should be... Whatever. Okay, so one has three ports, one has four ports. One is a more traditional tap. So if we look at this one, actually, if you look at the side view here, I've got AB and then my monitor for AB. So what this means is, for example, if I had a switch connected to A and a computer connected to B, this only monitors the traffic going to the switch, and this one only monitors the traffic going to the PC, which makes it easy for me to break out. So if I'm looking at a network tool trying to figure out which way the traffic is flowing, this is the kind of tap that I would like to use.
Okay.
Right. Kind of specialized, though, because it means I need two monitoring computers.
Right.
And most people don't need that if they're doing something just like in their local network. They want a single interface that they can plug in a single computer that will do all the listening on that one port.
Okay.
And that's when you get this. So this is an aggregation tap. Same thing. I've got A and B. So imagine A is my switch and B is my computer. This is my tap. So I plug in here. This gives me the traffic flowing in either direction. Both of these are gigabit. Okay. Which is why they're a bit pricier. 100 megabit or 10 megabit, those are easy to tap. I can do that with 3 seconds and a couple of cents worth of parts.
Because a couple of episodes ago, we looked at the Shark, was it? The Shark one tap, that would do a gigabit tap.
But. And which is what we're going to be using again, because although these are nice, these are a bit big. Yeah. I mean, this is not something that you can just
drop
in your
bag. Looks like a rack mount.
It is. I mean, that's what it's designed for. There's actually a chassis that these things screw into at home, and it mounts these side by side. So in my rack, I actually have like 10 of these, and they're monitoring different circuits depending on what I need to troubleshoot.
Okay, so just as like a general application, you hook these up, and you're looking at traffic that's going between your computers and your switch, and just so you know what's going on.
Well, we'll talk about that, because when you talk about tapping a network, there's no such thing as just saying, okay, the network's tapped.
Yeah.
You need to look at where you're tapping, because where you tap, physically, where you tap in the network will determine the kind of information that you're going to get.
And it probably depends on what kind of information you're looking for.
Right. Okay. Are you just looking, for example, sometimes I only want to tap in one direction from an AP, because I have a phone connected to that access point, and I want to know if the phone is sending in any information even when I'm not doing anything with it. That's standard practice for me. I have a circuit that's all it does. Anytime I get a new device, I turn it on, I connect it to that access point, and there should be no traffic. Right. If I see any traffic, it means, okay, it means it's communicating without me doing anything.
And then you get suspicious?
I get suspicious. It could be innocent. It could be something like, okay, Windows is checking to see if I have an update. Right. Or it could be Android looking for time. And I can see that in the packet. Mm-hmm. But if I start to see like a bunch of different servers that the thing is contacting, I start thinking it's phoning home. And then it warrants a little further investigation.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
But, again, we're not asking our audience to go out there and buy a $5,000 tab.
No. And I think if we're doing like a back to school, they're more worried about spending money on books and computers pizza. And things. Pizza, yeah. Yeah. Beer. Probably don't have $5,000 to drop on a Switch. Yeah.
So we've got this. We showed you this last week, and I want to bring it back because it is such a cool device. Alex, if you could go to the link. It is being sold on Amazon. Unfortunately, I think it's still unavailable. Oh, no, it's back. Aha, it was unavailable for a while. So this is about $180, which is way less expensive than $1,000 to $5,000.
Yeah.
But this is incredibly powerful. This is an aggregating tap. So just like that other one, that NetOptics that takes the traffic on both ports and puts it into one port, that's exactly what this will do. I've got input or output on here. So this one, the blue one, is going to my computer. This orange one is going to the switch. It's going to the router. And then the green cord here, this is giving me the traffic going in either direction.
Right. Okay. So, and then you have that plugged into just like another computer that's the monitoring
computer.
Thank you.
Right, exactly. So all it does is it sits there, and it's going to be using Wireshark, which is the software I like to use for this, and it will just listen to the traffic, and it will record every packet that flows through that
network. And then you can filter and parse down to what you're actually, like certain packets that you're
looking
for.
Precisely. And this is something that's small enough to be inside my toolkit. The other thing I really like about this is it's USB powered. Which means it's very, very easy for me to, say, hook up an external USB battery. It's only got a 350 milliamp draw at 5 volts. So I could hook up, like, one of my Energizer battery packs and run this thing for 5 days off of a battery pack. So if I needed to, like, just drop it in, it's very, very possible. Versus the NetOptics, which they really kind of want to be rack-mounted.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. A couple of other things that you should know about this. It will do 10, 100, and 1,000. So all the way down from 10 megabit per second all the way up to a gigabit per second.
Mm-hmm.
It auto-negotiates. It also does auto-MDIX. So it will flip cables so you don't need a crossover.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. MDIX.
That's most switches will do MDIX now. So they'll automatically detect if the cable is reversed, and they'll just flip the pairs in software. Remember, one side is transmit and one side is receive, which needs to be on the other side needs to be receive and transmit.
Right.
And sometimes you get it like this, and so this will just flip it.
Flip it software.
And, yeah.
Ah, oh, that's cool. Okay.
It also aggregates both sides of the conversation into that one port. So just like we mentioned last week, you can only get 1 gigabit per second out.
Right.
Which means if you've got more than 1 gigabit flowing in both directions.
So You'll start to drop packets.
I will start to drop packets. Now, this has a feature where it will actually try to slow the connection a tiny bit. So it will throttle you down until you hit a certain threshold, and then it will say, I can't in good conscience slow down your network anymore. Let it go, and I'm just going to drop the packets.
Okay. And I guess in that situation, should you just be happy that you have a fast connection?
Yeah. And the other thing is, honestly, unless you're hooking this up on a backbone link, which I probably won't want to use an aggregation tap to do, you're not going to hit the 1 gigabit per second limit in both directions.
Cool.
Unless you are, like, doing a massive upload at the same time that you're doing a massive download.
which I can think of a couple of reasons why that would happen.
But let's talk about the network, because I mentioned that where you tap determines what kind of information you're going to get.
Okay.
And by your logic, as you mentioned, it also means depending on what you're looking for, that determines where you should tap.
Right.
This will only be able to see the traffic between two devices.
Okay.
Now, those two devices could be anything. It could be two computers that are just hooked up, with a crossover, or actually with this, so that they talk directly to one another.
Right.
And in that case, it will find all the traffic that passes between those two computers. It could be between this computer and a switch, and it will only find all the traffic between that computer and that port on that switch. Because remember the way that a switch works, it does not repeat the traffic. So the traffic going to port 1 does not get repeated out of port 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So if you're going to put it on an endpoint, you're only going to get the traffic from that endpoint. Now, for example, if you wanted to see the traffic going out of your network entirely.
So you put that between the modem and the router?
There you go, exactly. Okay. Which means any traffic that passes either to or from the internet will be logged by the system. And that could be 1,000 computers on the local side of the network.
Yeah.
All of that traffic will go through here.
You probably drop packets then.
You'll probably drop packets. Yeah. I mean, you get enough of those together, it's going to drop packets. Yeah. But the point that I'm trying to make is you decide where you're capturing. And that's why I have multiple taps. I have one tap that taps between the internet and my router. I have one tap that taps between my server network and the client network. So it looks at all the packets that are flowing between clients and what they want off the server. I have one, as I mentioned, that's set up for just that one access point so I can test new devices to see if they phone home. This is the way that you have to think when you do network monitoring, because it's too difficult to just look at a network and figure out what it's doing. What you can do is look at a network and figure out what individual pieces are doing, and then that gives you a better picture.
Okay. So if we were in a dorm room sort of situation and you had a suspicion that one of your roommates was hogging all the bandwidth, would you then put it between their computer and then the router, I guess?
In that particular case, what I would do is I would just put it between, like, the switch and my router.
Mm-hmm.
So we're both connected to that switch. This will actually be able to detect which client on the network is pulling which packets.
Okay, right, right. That
we'll actually show you this. So let's do a couple of steps here. Let's make it really easy. The first step, of course, is to get yourself a tapping device. And unless you've got a lot of money to blow, I would not recommend the NetOptics. Great devices.
I'm paying for college. No,
you're paying for college. Get yourself a Shark Tap. These things are fantastic. You can also, I mean, if you don't mind operating at 10-100, there are ways to do it on the cheap, but, I mean, then you are really limiting. I mean, you're one-tenth of the total bandwidth you could get off of one of these. The other thing that you could do is you could get something like a hub, and a hub is like a cheap man switch because every frame is repeated on every port.
It shoots it out everywhere. And you had, I think it was one of the networking episodes that we had done a while back, you said, like, you could get a hub so then you could see what was and use it like a tap.
You can use it like a tap, but, I mean, we're already complaining about being limited to 1 gig.
And a hub would be worse.
Being limited to, like, 10 meg or 100 meg.
Yeah, it would be worse, yeah.
That's even worse. Now, the other part is you need to get a device that is capable of receiving the tap stream. Because a tap by itself doesn't do anything except redirect the traffic. Unless there's something listening to the redirected traffic, you're not doing anything. So we have this computer right here. This is an old Acer, what is it, an 1830. It's one of the, actually, this was the original computer I brought on the TNT.
Oh.
Way back when.
Cute little guy. Cute. Windows 7, was it, Core?
It's an i7 with 4 gigs. This is an old machine. This thing is, what, I got this in 2009, I think. It was a while back.
Perfect for listening, though.
Still, yeah, exactly. It's got a gigabit Ethernet port, a wired port, which is I want. Well, yeah. I don't like using computers that have dongles.
Or, yeah, USB
does
to
weird
Ethernet.
Things to the traffic. Yeah, that's...
Yeah,
that's,
this... Yeah, you don't see ones with the Ethernet very often anymore.
You don't. That's why I like this one. and this is going to be running Wireshark. We're going to show Wireshark in just a bit. You also need to get Wireshark. And the latest version of Wireshark, we've got a link for this. Alex, if you go there, it's you can get 32-bit, you can get 64-bit, you can get it for Mac, you can get it for PC, you can get it for Linux. This is sort of the de facto standard for doing any sort of tapping or network protocol analysis. It really is a powerful tool. We're going to use a tiny bit of its power, but it's a good thing to learn.
Right. It's one of those things that it's... Like, the concept is simple, but when you start diving into what you can do with it, it starts to get, like, complicated pretty quickly.
Now, step four is, we've already talked about it, find out where you're going to place your tap. Mm-hmm. What I would suggest at the beginning, tap between your computer and the switch, because you need to learn how this actually works.
Right.
You don't want to get confused with a lot of traffic from other devices on your network.
Mm-hmm.
Just doing that, I guarantee you it's going to be fascinating because you're going to find out your computer is communicating to way more servers than you thought it was.
Especially if you tell your computer not to upgrade to Windows 10 and you find out that it's doing that anyway.
We're going to bring this up, bro. I thought we were cool, man.
When a computer restarts mid-show,
Hippo is referring to is the recording we did just before this. We were halfway through the show when suddenly... Even though I had checked don't install without my approval, Windows said, hey, you know what? This is a good time to upgrade you to the anniversary edition.
I hear what you said about checking.
But I don't think he really meant it.
I don't think he meant it, so I'm going to do it anyway.
Thanks, Microsoft. Appreciate that. Now, when we come back, we're actually going to do a little quick break from tapping because we want to give them the practicals towards the end of the show.
Right.
But we want to show you something else you might want to consider when you're going to be in an environment like a dorm. Brian, we've said this a lot, which is... If someone has physical access to your devices, there's not a lot you can do to keep them out.
Yeah, that's true. You're kind of hosed at that point.
Right. And we can do all these wonderful tricks with networking, especially with taps, where we can capture your network credentials. We can find out who you're talking to. But what if I told you that it was possible for someone to have a USB stick-sized device and just go from computer to computer, all the clients on the floor of a dorm, and be able to capture all their network credentials within, 5-10 minutes?
That would scare me.
It would scare you. Good. Good. Because that means you're still sane. We've actually got Mubix, who's going to be coming on to explain a little something that he found, a ridiculously, almost comically simple way to do just that. But before we get there, you know what I want to do, Brian?
What's that?
I want to help the folks out there who are watching this network edition of Back to School and saying, you know what? I like this stuff. Tapping? It sounds like right
Start
up my alley.
Getting interested about that stuff. Yeah.
Maybe it's a career. Maybe it's something I want to do with my life.
Right. Or you want to go somewhere where you can prove that you've learned these things.
Precisely.
You know? Instead of just saying, oh, I watched episode blah, blah, blah of Know How, so I know it now.
Exactly. Which is why we are so happy to have IT Pro TV as a sponsor of this episode of Know How. Now, IT Pro TV is a, well, it's not just a place to learn. It's also a place of reference. Whether you're a beginner, intermediate, or an expert, they've always got content for you because they understand that IT profession is living. It's something that's always growing, something that's always learning. And they want to make sure that you've got the reference materials to learn new material, as well as to go back to things that you may have forgotten and refresh your knowledge. Now, they've got over 1,000 hours of content and more than 30 hours that are added each and every single week. You can stream their courses live and on demand worldwide to your Chromecast, your Roku, your Amazon Fire, Apple TV, or even your PC. You can learn at your own pace. This is important. They allow you to use your mobile device or your laptop or your desktop. They allow you to work on your schedule, which helps you to learn. Folks, there's nothing that kills the learning buzz more than being forced to work on someone else's schedule, someone else's tool. With IT Pro TV, you can learn the way that you want to learn on your own time. Now, their course topics include Certified Information Security System Security Professional, CompTIA Security Plus, CompTIA A Plus, and Ethical Hacking Version 9. Their November courses will include Server 2016, Identity with Server 2016, and Cybersecurity Analyst Plus. They've got transcripts that you follow from start to finish of every video, or you could jump to any part of the video. This is important. It means that rather than having to sit through an entire segment on, say, tapping, you could look into the transcripts and find the answer to one specific question you have about Wireshark. That is so important. I can't stress that enough. Now, they've also got 100-plus step-by-step virtual machine labs and Transcender practice exams. That's a $109 value that they give you with your subscription. You could take advantage of their low monthly subscription price and no-hassle cancellation policy because they understand that sometimes you just want to stop. And they're not going to put you through the rigmarole of jumping through one cancellation hoop after another. When you cancel, you're done. It's really that simple. Now, while subscriptions are still the best value, if you just want to taste some of their courses to see if they're for you, IT Pro TV courses are also available on Amazon Video Direct. And if you're currently signed up for an enterprise account with an IT Pro TV competitor and are subject to a rate increase, IT Pro TV will match your previous year's pricing of that account so that you and your team can learn at an affordable rate. IT Pro TV's clients include Harvard, MIT, UCSD, Stanford, and more. If they trust IT Pro TV, don't you think you should too? If you're looking for a job, or if you're just looking to refresh your skills and need to get involved in the IT community, IT Pro TV is the perfect place to start. Check out itpro.tv/knowhow. That's itpro.tv/knowhow to access the most popular IT certifications on the planet. Premium subscriptions are normally $57 a month or $570 per year, but we've got a special offer. Try it free for 7 days when you sign up using our code KNOWHOW30. You'll also receive 30% off the lifetime of your account. That's less than $40 per month or $399 for the entire year. Just visit itpro.tv/knowhow. That's itpro.tv/knowhow. And make sure to use the code KNOWHOW30 to try it free for 7 days, plus save 30% off the life of your account. IT Pro TV, a better way to learn. And we thank IT Pro TV for their support of KNOWHOW. Okay, Brian, you ready to get scared?
Yeah. I don't know if I'll ever be ready for that, but I'm interested to find out how easy it is to do what you first described.
Fantastic. Well, without further ado, here's Mubix and the USB Armory. If you've been anywhere near the internet, you know that there's a lot of talk about a new exploit that uses a USB computer to capture credentials. Well, we could talk about the rumors. We could maybe even theorize how it works. But I thought it might be better to actually bring the security researcher who found it out. And that's why we're speaking with Rob Fuller. He's known as Mubix on the internet. He is a security researcher extraordinaire. You may have seen him over at Hack 5. He's come into the Twit studios to explain and demo how this exploit works. Rob, thank you very much for talking to us.
No problem.
Now, we heard about this first a long time ago. This is not a new exploit. This is the capturing of credentials. But what has captured people's imagination, and I'd say their fears,
is the fact that this is now done on a piece of hardware. Can you explain how this works?
Yeah, so the USB Armory is a small board on or computer on stick PC that has the ability when you plug it in to be a USB Ethernet device. Same with the Hack5 Turtle. So when you plug it in, it boots up and does the same thing as if you connected it with a USB Ethernet cable. So it pretends that it's, you know, a standard device on the same network. Then the computer says, hey, oh, I'm now connected to a new Ethernet device. I'm going to connect. So like you said originally, this is nothing new. This is as if you just plugged in a Ethernet cable to your computer running Kali Linux or something like that to a victim PC. So all I did was shorten the cable, basically, and put it on a single device. So when you plug it in, it does all that and then starts up a tool called Responder. Now, a lot of computers automatically make all kinds of network traffic. Windows, Linux, Mac, they all make this network traffic. And what's nice about this attack is that normally most PCs trust their local network, just implicitly. Especially with Windows, it will automatically authenticate to anything on its local network that is looking for a share or stuff like that. So instead of attacking the host directly, I'm just waiting with this hardware tool for someone to come and look for things.
Okay, so let's unpack that, because that was actually pretty deep. It was pretty well woven. First of all, there's this. So this is the hardware. If you go to the overhead cam here, now a USB device. It's a curious thing in modern computing, because the computer trusts the USB device. Whatever the USB device tells the computer it is, the computer just says, you must be that,
right?
Which is what like the Hack5 Turtle takes advantage of.
Right.
I can reprogram my firmware to say I'm a keyboard, I'm a mouse, or in this particular case, it says I am a network adapter.
Yep.
Now, what does it take advantage of? So when I plug, say, a new USB to Ethernet dongle into my laptop, and that computer and that dongle then connects to my network, what is happening? What is this able to capture by pretending to be an Ethernet device?
Sure. So because of how Windows does networking, normally wireless is automatically a lower metric. It determines routes and paths via metrics. Mac does about the same thing with some little tweaks to it. But because it's plugging in, and because the Hack5 Turtle and the USB Armory both seem like they're 10/100 or 10, you know, a gigabit network connections, it's always going to beat it out. So it becomes the default gateway. It becomes the default DNS servers. And because of that, it then sends all of its traffic towards that device.
Right, right. And every time a device connects to a network, naturally, it's going to send out, especially if you've got yours set to automatically detect local proxies and authentication servers. It's going to send its credentials over that device, which it assumes is just a regular Ethernet adapter.
Right.
And then you have the advantage, you have the ability to capture that.
Right. So again, with the Responder tool, because it says it's local network, and that implicit trust comes through, it automatically tries to authenticate to the Responder tool. And the Responder tool starts up all of these different services automatically, like SMB server, HTTP server, proxy server, and all these things that normal network-connected computers are always looking for.
Right. Oh, Rob, there are some people out there who are uber paranoid, and they think, oh, this is one of those supercomputers that we saw in Iron Man 2, where you plug it in and it breaks the password, and now I have the password and I can get into the computer. That's not actually what this does, right?
Exactly.
So explain the difference between capturing someone's authentication information and capturing their login credentials.
Sure. So this is not plain text passwords at all. What is happening is it's capturing network-based authentication. Mm. Now, by default, Windows uses NTLM V1 or V2. And if you're Vista and above, it's always V2, and you can change that in configuration. But the reason why V1 and V2 came into play was Microsoft, way back in the day, said, hey, we don't want to send even a hashed password over the network.
Right.
So what they do is they send a challenger and a response. So one computer will say, hey, I want to open a share on X. And then the computer two says, okay, I'm X. You want to open the share. Here's this server challenge. And this is a random string. I think it's 16 bytes long, and I could be wrong on that. But it then says, okay, computer one, then takes its password that it knows and salts it with that new challenge, then sends it over the wire, and then, you know, X compares that to what it already knows with the challenge it knows. So it does that for Intel and V1. V2, a lot more complex because it adds a client challenge as well. So, and it also has a bunch of different crypto options in there that have changed too. So, so that's all you're capturing. That you're capturing this salted slash network communication. And while it is their credential in a sense, it's salted and has all these things that add to the complexity for when you're trying to crack it into a clear text credential.
And it's important to note that I could do this before. Any man in the middle attack that gives me access to the traffic, I would be able to capture this. But because it's hardware and because it works so quickly, it's a new vector. It's something that I can physically plug into a machine and within 20 seconds be able to walk away. I now have that on the device and I can crack it at my leisure.
Yeah, so a couple of use case scenarios that I've heard so far is going up to the cleaning lady or cleaning guy and said, hey, while you're walking around, can you just plug these into a couple things? The light's going to turn off. And then afterwards, give it to me and I'll give you $1,000. So that's the evil vector that is obvious. And then one of the positive vectors that I've seen is so for forensic guys who have had to try and crack like hard drive encryption and stuff like that for criminals, they now see this as a vector where they can plug it in while the computer's live and get the credential and then be able to log into the hard drive encrypted device.
Right. Once they have that that salted hash, so they've got the authentication information, but they do need to crack it. I know that it varies greatly on how much power and how much time you need to be able to crack that hash. What would you typically see? So let's just take Joe Schmo Computer, who doesn't know much about networking. He has a MacBook that he brings in to work every day and he plugs it in. He has a 8-character password. I know you can't give an exact time because it's going to differ greatly depending on how complex he made his password or whether or not he used spaces. But would I be able to crack that hash in a reasonable amount of time to make this attack useful?
So two answers. First, because the Macs use NTLM V1 by default instead of V2, there is a public documentation and things on how to crack that down to NTLM. So no matter how long that person's password is, it can be 400 characters long. That can still be cracked down within about 23 hours down to an NTLM version of the hash, and then they can use it to across the network. Now, if you had a Windows box using NTLM V2 or an up-to-date or configured Mac, then a 8-character password can be cracked within about a couple seconds. It's really fast on an up-to-date graphics card. You start adding characters. And that's where password strength gets into play. If you start adding characters, you start adding exponents of time.
Okay. Now, let's actually show people what this looks like, because they might be wondering if this is too complicated for them to imagine. Could you run the attack on your laptop right now?
No.
Please?
Okay. Again, this is a very simple attack. It just has a GCP server and responder on it. That's all that's really configured on this thing. So it's not like someone couldn't just go out and set this up.
Right.
I detail it on my blog. So all I'm doing is plugging this in, hopefully. So this Mac is completely locked out. If you switch to the HDMI, you'll see just a black screen, and it's going on. Yep, black screen. So here you start seeing the USB Armory booted up. It starts clicking off CPU cycles.
So right now it's pretending to be the Ethernet adapter, and it's saying, okay, I need credentials for this network resource.
And hopefully it will turn off in a second.
So it's been about 7 seconds so far?
Yeah, the Macs usually take a little bit longer.
Whoa.
So there it is. So I logged in, and I've gone into my responder logs, and as you can see, both here and here, I've got some proxy authentication, and that's what really works over the Mac. And then the SMB on Windows is what I had earlier. So if I cat the proxy authentication, this is NTLM V2. V1 is what you get from HTTP stuff, and that didn't happen as fast as I'd like. We cat that out, and you can see that user, my domain, there's the challenge, there's the client challenge, and there's the rest of the hash.
Wow.
So, yep. And it happened quite a few times by the time I unplugged and plugged it in.
And so, again, you could give this to the cleaning woman, and she could just plug it into every computer on a floor, and it would all show up here. I'd have the different users, any different domains that they might be connected to, and yep. all the hashes, and I can crack them whenever I feel like it.
Right. And you could keep this around just as you're going around to different places and just keep plugging it in, and then, you know, finally take it back somewhere and then crack it. But yeah.
You know, one of the components of this is people might be freaked out. They really shouldn't be, because this has been possible for a very, very long time. And the other thing is that this isn't technically a bug. Right. This was a feature. This was something that people wanted because they wanted to be able to quickly connect to network resources.
Right.
So I got to ask you, what are the mitigation strategies? Can I turn off those features? Can I turn off those network resources?
Yeah. So it's one of the hardest problems I've had to deal with, because I've been working with a lot of people who've responded to some of the press and trying to figure out what the best way to do things. There's a blog post that came out exactly the same day as I published mine, called from exploitmonday.com, and they had a great article on writing up Matt Graber had a great article on writing up Device Guard, which is a new thing for Windows 10. I think it might be 8.1 or 8, that allowed you to restrict different devices based on different features. So you can say in your enterprise, no more USB Ethernet. But as we talked offline,
right.
A lot of computers these days aren't having Ethernet cables or RJ45s in them anymore, right? So it's hard to do. So how do you mitigate this from a technology's point, an OS standpoint? Well, you can make it only Kerberos. So Kerberos is harder to crack, but Responder also does Kerberos. So 2 is 1, 1 is none, right? So half a dozen, whatever. So it's really hard to kind of mitigate this. And I've been working on it, and I don't have a solution yet.
Yeah, and again, that's because since it's not based on an exploit, you can't fix the exploit. It's based
right.
on a feature,
and right.
you can't fix the feature without breaking the way that a lot of us authenticate with our networks.
Right.
Oh wow. Okay. So I guess we're going to have to leave you in despair, folks. That's just the way it works.
If you have an option, if you have a way to fix this thing, please let me know. I'd love to
burn out the USB ports. I think that would probably
yeah.
well, actually no, that wouldn't work, because they'd still be able to do this attack, just not with the hardware.
Right. Yep.
Go figure. Rob Fuller, thank you very much for joining us. Now,
sure.
if they want to find out more about your work, they maybe find out more about what you do with Hack 5, more
sure.
about the seminars that you teach, where should they go?
So room362.com is where I have all of my stuff posted. I also host Metasploit Minute on the Hack 5 channel. But at Mubix, I don't know. Like that's where you can find me.
Absolutely a pleasure. Always an honor. I've seen you at DEF CON in passing, and
yep.
I see you on the Hack 5 network. So thank you for sharing your network knowledge.
Sure, no problem. Thanks.
Okay, I have to stress, because people were freaking out over this hack, thinking, oh my gosh, you plug it in and then you get my password. No, that's not how it works. I get
mm-hmm.
your network credentials. So I don't get access to your computer.
Right.
But I could get access to everything your computer is connected to, which
right.
is arguably more important.
Yeah, definitely. And it happens so quick.
It does.
Like, it doesn't take long at all.
That really is the scary part. I mean, I could always do this, but it normally meant I had to like do ARP spoofing in order to make your traffic come through me. And then I had to hope that you did a network authentication, an NTLM,
yeah.
while I was connected. This way, it's literally, I could give it to someone who knows nothing about computers and say, plug it into the USB port, wait until the light stops blinking, and then bring it back to me. And,
wow.
you know, they're done in 10 seconds, and then I've got all night to run Hashcat, which is running off of my GTX 1080 at fantastic rates. And unless you had a strong password, and let's face it, a lot of people still have really weak
is
passwords.
Is Monkey1234 not
it's
good enough?
Totally not.
Oh.
Totally not. It'll figure it out, and then I now have access to all your network resources.
Yeah, that is scary. You were right. You have scared me now. So is there... Can you disable USB ports
sure,
through software?
Sure. The problem, though, is, I mean, look at both of our computers here. Do you see an Ethernet port on our computers? Yeah.
No.
No.
I don't.
No, you don't.
Mm.
Because we don't build those into our laptops anymore. So if I just make a policy to disable USB ports, essentially what I'm saying is you can't connect to my network
crud.
Precisely. That's the other thing. And yeah, there are people who think, I just put glue in my USB ports. Well, I get that. And you know what? There's still the bad USB hack out there. So USB technically is a gaping security hole. But the problem is it gives us so much convenience that we're willing to live with the danger that we don't think will actually find us.
All right, so just lock the door. Don't let anyone near your computer.
Yeah. Speaking of finding us, do you sometimes lose your devices? It's kind of ironic because your devices are smart and then we do something stupid like leaving it at a coffee store or on a bench or dropping it on the street somewhere. Wouldn't it be nice if there was a way to somehow easily track every single piece of technology that's important to you? A way that lasted for a year, that was easy to change its battery so you didn't have to repurchase it. A way that didn't even need to be in range of your device in order to work properly. Well, Brian, unfortunately, that doesn't exist.
Oh, it does, Padre.
Really?
And I used it while we were at IFA in Berlin. I put it in my luggage. I put it in my backpack.
Well, exactly. Now, the tracker is this tiny little device. This is wonderful. Brian's playing our hand model. They actually customized this for us. Thank you very much, tracker. They're beautiful, beautiful devices. Go ahead and take that thing out. This is a tiny little piece of technology that allows you to find out exactly where your item might be. Now, the way that it works is it uses Bluetooth LE, that's the low-energy version of Bluetooth, to make a connection with your mobile device. Now, these are actually very commonplace. But this does a few things that I really like. The first is the battery is replaceable. I've used a couple of tracking devices where when the battery died after 8 months, you just had to throw away the device and buy a new one. Not so with this. Just pop this out, replace the battery, and you're good to go. Once you're paired up, there's a little bit of magic that goes on. First, you could set it so that it warns your device if you're walking away. Let's say you're in Starbucks and you leave this connected to your bag and then you start walking away towards the counter. Mm-hmm. Well, once you get a preset amount of distance away, you can get an alert on your phone saying, hey, whoa, come back here. Mm-hmm. The other thing that this will do is it will actually do reverse location. You could, when you lose your phone, press the button on the tracker and it will activate the ring on your phone even if your phone is on silent. And this is such a well-thought-out device. But Brian, the part of the tracker that really gets me every time is this crowd GPS, this mesh GPS feature that they use. Normally, if you have a tracking device, if you go out of the range, if you go beyond the range of Bluetooth, it just won't work anymore.
Right.
But this will work as long as you're within 100 feet of any tracker user, not just you. You'll get a ping on your phone that tells you exactly where the device is, even if you're miles and miles states away.
Yeah, no, that's right. Like, so for me, this is my list of devices. I've got my luggage, I've got my backpack, and I have my motorcycle, and then I have my wife's keys, because she tends to lose those. But the nice thing with the tracker is, like, if either of us go by one of the trackers, it pops up on the map.
Yeah. You can track up to 10 devices. You've got a couple in there, but I bought a couple of these, so I've kind of sprinkled them liberally. And not only that, but they're so precise that you can actually find their location inside of a building. So it's not just it's somewhere within 10 meters of this building. It's on the second floor.
That's right. What is it the name of that you plug into the wall? It's the Tracker Atlas?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That thing is fantastic. Now, folks, this is probably one of the coolest pieces of tech that we've had on the desk. And it is so small and it is so simple. And yet, so worth it. With over 1.5 million devices, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world. If you lose your item, the Tracker app records its last known location on a map. When another Tracker user comes within 100 feet of your item, you'll receive a GPS update of where your item is located. It's one of these ways to have connectivity, even if you're nowhere near the item that you lost. We want you to try the Tracker. Go to thetracker.com and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter the promo code KNOWHOW, you'll get a free Tracker Bravo with your order. That's the Tracker, thetracker.com, promo code KNOWHOW to get your free Tracker Bravo today.
We thank Tracker for their support of KNOWHOW.
Okay, Brian, so we've scared people a little bit with what I can do with the USB armory.
Oh, right, that. I thought you were just talking us in general.
Well, we need to teach people how to scare.
Oh, right.
With your knowledge of network tapping. All right, so we've got our little setup here. Again, we're running through this little tap. Mm-hmm. This is being powered off of my laptop, which is kind of awesome. I love that fact.
Nice.
This is going to be intercepting all of the traffic going between the internet and the laptop that I have that's displaying our show notes right now. The same laptop, which, by the way,
because Windows updated, suddenly all the notifications that I turned off are back.
Oh, that's so weird.
That's such a good idea.
And did
right?
all your Bluetooth devices work?
They just disappeared.
They disappeared
like,
too.
Hey, you know what? I know you had these before, but you probably don't want them anymore, right?
Right, right. You know, it has that, that tagline that says, don't worry, all your files are just where you left them. It's like, that doesn't make me feel any better when I see that.
Microsoft, we know better. How about that? Okay, so I've got Wireshark installed on my computer. Actually, if you go over here, this is what the interface looks like. This is the newly updated edition. So it is a little bit different than the one that we used the last time that we were on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's already hooked up to the tap port. So all I should have to do is tell it to connect to this. If you zoom in on this, it's telling you the different interfaces. I've turned off the wireless interfaces because I don't want to get any of the traffic through there.
Right.
It's only capturing the packets that are coming into the Atheros PCIe connected network controller.
Right.
So I'm just going to click this.
The Ethernet. Yeah.
Right. Just let me get there. There we go. Click that, and now it's starting a capture. Now I'm not doing anything on the computer right now. And there we go. It's starting off. This is actually normal. So what I see here is there's a lot of source 192.168.1.1. That is my router.
Right.
And it's see the destination 239.255.255.250.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's picking up some of the traffic that's passing between the router and the client device. It's looking for what's on the network.
Hmm.
As I scroll down, I start to see more and more of these packets. Yeah, I see packets that are encrypted. I see different protocols. So SNMP, ICMP, ARP, SSL, TCP. This is a complete view of everything that's passing between these two points, between the secondary laptop and the router. Now, let's go ahead and go to TwitTV. So I'm going to go start this up, twit.tv, boom.
And this is, yeah, that's all everything without even touching your PC.
Without touching my PC. So all of this, whenever I go to TwitTV, look at this. I've got my source, 192.168.1.177, which is a laptop. It's going outside of the network to 104.244.4371. It's using TCP, and this is the payload. Now, this is kind of confusing. To people who don't know what this is, you might stare at this and go, okay, fine, the tap is working, I'm getting traffic, but what exactly do I do with this?
Yeah, because it's a little overwhelming just looking at this.
It is crazy overwhelming. So what I want to do is I want to show you some of the functions, some of the features that you can easily activate inside of Wireshark to find bits and pieces of information that will help you make better network decisions.
Okay.
The first, and you alluded to this, if my roommate's, I think my roommate's using up all the bandwidth, yeah, I don't have a really good way to prove it, now you do. If you've got a tap-in line, you can do this. So I'm going to go to statistic or conversations under statistics. I'm going to go to IPv4. And then if I hit bytes, this actually shows me the top talkers. Will say, okay, this is how much data that this particular client has transmitted or received.
Hmm.
I know the exact address of the client, and I know the addresses to where it was communicating. So, for example, because I went to Twit, I know, see, that I have in one direction 177.0.1.26, and the other direction 71.0.1.77.
Yeah. And right? Then the destination, and then it's reversed, right?
It
underneath.
Reverses,
yeah.
Right, precisely, because it's a two-way conversation.
Right.
So I could use this with multiple clients on my network, and it will show all the computers and how much data they've transferred and where they've transferred it to.
That's pretty cool.
It's very cool and super, super simple. Now, the thing is, you need to be running this all the time, and the drive on the computer needs to be big enough to actually hold the captured packets, because it's not just capturing the metadata. It's actually capturing all the traffic.
Oh, wow. So that could fill up pretty quick,
that
then.
Could fill up very quickly. So, like, if you transfer 100 gigabytes worth of data a month, that's actually 100 gigabytes
that you're that recording
on the
tablet.
Wow. So just
okay.
know that. Know
okay.
That. That's why I typically, my computers that do the tapping at home, they either use a desktop or they have a separate interface that connects to a network drive that, and it pushes the packets there.
Okay, because then you just have a huge network drive that sits. And
precisely.
Just,
yeah. What you don't want to do, which is what I did a long time ago when I was a noob at this, was don't do that, but then route through the regular network because...
Are you doubling up?
The capture computer is capturing its own packets.
Right. Oh.
I was like, why is it filling up so fast? Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
And it's a loop. So it's capturing the packets that it captured and pushed onto the network,
right,
which are now again being captured and being pushed onto the network. So you could, like,
it's like double dipping.
No, it's not double dipping. It's like infinity dipping. It's like you transfer 10 megabits of data and it's got 40 terabytes.
Oh, wow.
It's not real useful.
Okay, so you filled maxed out a couple drives then.
Precisely. Yeah. The other thing that you can do with Wireshark, and this is actually very useful, this is called the filter display. This allows you to look at just certain packets. Like, for example, I can say, just give me TCP, and it will filter out all the packets that are not TCP, allowing me to have, you know, a better view of just that type of communication. Or I could say, show me SSL, and now it's only going to show me the packets that have been encrypted.
Okay.
I could also ask for DHCP, so I can say, okay, how many times how many times did a client request DHCP information on my network? And there's a whole list of all the different filters that I can apply inside of Wireshark.
Right. Why would you want to search for like TCP over like SSL over something else? Like,
It's all troubleshooting. It's network troubleshooting. I mean, sometimes like I look for FTP. I'm like, there shouldn't be FTP. I didn't do any FTP.
And if you do see FTP, then you know something's up.
Right. Or I could look for like strange ports. Like right now, there's no FTP, so I'm good.
Right.
But sometimes I'll see something in the FTP screen. I'll go, what initiated an FTP transfer? And then I can backtrack it and find out, okay, I've got a bad actor on the network.
Okay. So yeah, if you were you suspected that your computer or a computer on your network was hosed. Is that what, like, you just search FTP? You're like, I know I'm not using FTP, so if something pops up, that's bad. But what would be...
FTP would be simple, but I mean, it would be like the number one eater of traffic that we don't like as IT administrators are torrent clients. And they normally like to use weird ports.
Right.
And so there's actually an expression I can add here to say, okay, take away all the standard ports, all the ones that I know of, and only show me data flowing to and from ports and protocols that I can't classify.
Right.
And if I see like, oh, 2 terabytes transferred, that's probably a torrent device, and it will show me the computer that's doing it.
God, that would be
super powerful. It's crazy cool. Powerful. I mean, people always ask for different pieces of hardware that can do all this magical stuff, and really all you need is a decent tap and a decent installation of Wireshark.
And you could do this over the wireless too if you have the right antenna.
Wireshark will work over any network interface. I'm pushing it only through the Ethernet interface right now because I want a nice clean capture. I only want this. But I could also hook it up to the Wi-Fi and I could say, hey, you know what, put me into promiscuous mode and just show me everything. Any packets that you capture, dump into Wireshark. That's what I used to do. I don't do that anymore.
No.
It's a bad
person. Bad.
Yeah. We're going to do a more advanced tutorial of this because I do want to keep playing with the Shark Tab. It is a phenomenal piece of tech. I'm so happy that I bought this thing.
Yeah.
I've been sitting on the fence for a long time.
And not crazy expensive for what it's capable of.
No, $180 for something that gives you the same capabilities as a $5,000 box. Yeah, that's a good deal.
Who could argue with that?
Nah, not at all. We know that this was a lot of information. We want to make it very easy for you to get our notes, which, Brian, where did they find those?
twit.tv/KH. And if you scroll through, you'll find some of our backlogged episodes. And it's always fun to see what kind of screenshots we came up with and stuff.
Why are we so short in that episode? We're sitting.
Yeah, because you're sitting. No, the cameras were a little off that day.
Yeah, go figure.
That was cool that Jason and Megan came on and helped out with stuff.
They were, you know, I needed two people to replace you, Brent. I needed Patrick Delahanty because he's really tall.
He's basically two people, yeah. I appreciate that.
Now, don't forget that we also do a social presence. You can find us on Google+. Just look for Know How. There's a little approval process to keep out all the spam accounts, but we'll add you right in. And I got to say, 10,000 plus Kitas make for a wonderfully active community. It's a great place to show off your projects, ask questions about projects, or if you're an advanced maker DIYer, maybe to pass your knowledge on to the next generation. So again, Google+, look for Know How.
That's right. And if you want to figure out what we're doing when we're not on Know How, or you want to see what's coming up on a project, or what Padre has melted and burnt at his desk.
Everything.
You'll want to follow us on Twitter. I am at @cranky_hippo.
And you're going to find me at @PadreSJ. And we have a third member of our crew.
We do.
Every time I say that, he reaches for the mute button.
He's ready.
I'm ready. And you're ready. It's my job to freeze you.
And that's exactly what Alex does.
This is, yep, this is what's going to happen to us. He's going to chase us down and try and freeze us.
You can find Mr. Freeze at ANELF3, that's an ELF3, on Twitter. By the way, that was the wonderful film Logan's Run. Thank you very much for
yes.
that clip.
Protein and fish from
the sea. If
you
like camping movies, that thing, it holds up. It really
I need to rewatch that. I haven't seen that in like over a decade.
Exactly. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how.
go tap it.